Good morning and welcome to another online Awaken sermon. This one is called, "This is What's Real." And that's a quote from a movie which we'll get to in a little bit, but first, we have to start at the book, or should I say, the letter of Colossians. Because Colossians is a letter all about truth. And one of the things we'll see today is that the questions that were being asked when this letter was first written 2,000 years ago are many of the same questions that we're asking today. And the wisdom that's being given in this book or in this letter, it's wisdom that is useful, that is true for us today. So I want to begin, or this whole sermon is simply two questions that I want to address. The first question, how do I know what's true? And then the second question, which maybe it's just a different way of asking that first question, how do I distinguish truth in today's world? Because it seems like, if you're like me, it seems like there's all sorts of different messages and narratives which are bombarding you from all different directions. And we have some people, groups, organizations, and sources that are telling us, this is what's true. This is what you should put your faith in. This is what you should believe. While on the other hand, we have other people, groups, sources, organizations telling us, that's not the truth. This is actually what's true. This is what you should believe to be the most true. These questions, they're not new to us. They're questions we've all been asking because we all want to know what is truth. What is the path to walk that leads us to truth? How do we experience truth in our lives? Now, if you're new to Colossians, a little background. Colossians is a book that shows up in the New Testament. So it's towards the back of the Bible. It was written by the Apostle Paul sometime in the 50s CE, so about 2,000 years ago. And it was written to a church in Colossae, which is in Asia Minor, or modern-day Turkey. And Paul has actually never visited this church himself. But Paul was well-known throughout this region during this time, especially amongst churches, amongst Christians, which is who Paul is writing to. He's writing to a church in the city of Colossae. Now, these Christians, they're new Christians. They haven't been followers of Jesus for long. And so Paul is writing this letter for two reasons. One, he wants to encourage them on their journey. He wants to encourage them on their path of following Jesus. Paul's acting like a cheerleader. Remember, Paul would have been very well known amongst the churches. The people who started the church in Colossae, they would have been disciples of Paul. So these disciples, they would have told the people all about Paul, all that they learned from him, all the wisdom that they had gleaned from him. So Paul would have been like a mentor. He would have been someone like an elder, someone who had helped shape their path, who had helped them begin this journey of following Jesus. Even if they didn't know him in person, even if they had never met him, his philosophies, his ideas, his ways of thinking, his life would have been highly influential for these Christians. Think about the mentors you have in your life, the people that you look up to, the people who have guided your journey, who have shaped you, people who maybe you never even met, but their art, their words, their music has shaped you in immeasurable ways. And then imagine if that person were to send a letter personally to you or to your tribe. When you found out that a letter was sent from this mentor to your people, to your group, most likely you would drop everything that you were doing in order to read this letter. You couldn't get to this letter quick enough. I guarantee you, when these Christians at Colossae heard that Paul had written them a letter, they couldn't read these words quick enough. And chances are, like you would do if you received a personalized letter, they would have read this letter through multiple times. They would have read it once, But then they would have said, let's read it again. Let's study it. Let's pick it apart. Let's see all the wisdom that's contained within this letter. Paul, just simply from the fact that he was writing them a letter, was encouragement in itself. But then all throughout the letter, he's telling them how he wants to encourage them. He wants to remind them of their experience in the beginning. He wants to remind them of the substance, the depth of what they experienced when they first started following Jesus. Because whenever you first start walking a path, there's all this excitement, this euphoria, there's this emotion. Then you know how it goes. Over time, the emotion begins to fade, and it's the substance under the emotion that lasts. And so Paul is trying to bring them back to the depth that they experienced when they first met the resurrected Christ. And then a second reason why Paul writes this letter, which is basically wrapped up in the whole idea of encouragement, is that he wants to combat particular heresies that have been confronting this church. There have been all sorts of different people and arguments and ideas that have come at these Christians, ideas which are tempting them to walk away from the path of Jesus, ideas that are pulling them in all sorts of different directions, ideas that are leaving them confused, disoriented. Probably for some of them, they're so in the dark that they just want to give up the whole journey of discovering truth. They want to throw the towel and say, what's the point? I don't know what's true anymore. I don't know what's real. They're telling me this is real. He's saying this is real. She's saying that. I don't know what to believe anymore. I don't want to think about it. Let me just live my life and not even think about truth or what's real. Let me just go and live a life where I don't have to reflect on these ideas. Let me just go and hide from the larger world that I'm swimming in. I mean, we've all been there before. Sometimes things seem so disorienting. There's no light. No one's flipped the light switch on for us, and we're just thinking, I'm just going to bury myself in the couch, or I'm going to pull the covers back over my head for a couple of months or years, let everything shake itself out, and then I'll see where we stand. Maybe someone else will have figured out truth or what's real by that point. I mean, here's Paul in his own words in the letter of Colossians, chapter 2, verse 4. Paul says, I tell you all of this. I write this to you so that no one may deceive you by fine-sounding arguments. I don't want anyone to deceive you by things that look really good, by things that are masquerading, illusions that are masquerading as truth. Verse 8, he says it this way. See to it that no one takes you captive. I love that imagery. See to it that no one locks you up. No one imprisons you. No one confines you to a room where you can't see anything beyond those four walls. And how do they do it? Through hollow and deceptive philosophy. Again, the imagery of that is utterly spectacular. Hollow philosophy, where there's no depth. There's no substance in the middle. We've all experienced things like this. Things that on the surface, they look great. But then you bite into them a little bit and you realize, wow, there's really nothing here. This idea, it sounded great. It provided a whole lot of emotion and euphoria and excitement. But then a couple days, weeks go by, and there's nothing substantial left. It's like one of those cream puff donuts. There's some, I remember one time when I was dating Steph, she brought me to this one place and the cream puff was so dense in the middle. It was the best cream puff I ever had. But then there's other cream puffs you have, you bite into them and there's nothing there. They're hollow. They look great on the outside, then you bite into them and you realize, this really isn't as good as it looks. That's what Paul's saying. See to it that no one holds you captive through hollow, really beautifully looking, sounding philosophies that when you begin to explore them, you realize there's really nothing there. And he says that these philosophies, these deceptive and hollow philosophies, they depend on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. Again, he's grounding them in what he's discovered to be true, Christ. He's saying that truth, reality, is found in Christ. So what does that mean? We'll get to that as we move along here. There's a movie which came out probably about 20, 25 years ago called The Beautiful Mind, starring Russell Crowe. This movie perfectly encapsulates, for me, the book of Colossians and this whole pursuit of truth. The movie, it's a fictionalized biographical story of American mathematician John Nash. 1944, he won the Nobel Prize for Economics. John Nash had his challenges. He had his struggles. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and for that reason, he spent time in psychiatric hospitals. So A Beautiful Mind, it tells his story. It tells about his struggles with schizophrenia. It shows us, the audience, what he dealt with, what was in his mind, what he was seeing all the time, what he had to learn to manage in order to be successful. Now, what he had to learn to manage in order to be a normal human being in the world. And there's this one scene in the movie, which is a heartbreaking scene, where the movie shows us that part of his schizophrenia is that John Nash would be seeing imaginary people. And these imaginary people, they'd be top secret government officials, some of them, and they would give him secret missions, missions that he had to do in order to save his country, that he missions that he was going on for the government, because it was only him accomplishing these missions that would enable the country to be saved from others. There's one scene where John Nash is talking to one of these top secret government officials. He's carrying out a mission. And as a result of this, he's giving his child a bath, and the baby almost drowns in the bath because he's so distracted and so distraught and all over the place. So he gets into this argument with his wife. He had left the water running in the bath while he was talking to one of these officials. And he gets into this argument, rightly so, with his wife about everything that he's going through, and she is really upset with him. She's upset with his life and how things are going. She's upset with what has happened to them, upset with the fact that he almost let the baby drown because of what he was seeing and these imaginary people that were in his mind. And so she calls the doctors over. The doctors come. They want to take him away. They want to take him to a hospital for observation. But his wife says, no, I'm going to work through this with him. I'm going to help him learn to manage this. So she sends the child away with her parents for a certain period of time so that she can be with John Nash through this, so that she can help him manage this and get this under control. So the doctors leave, the baby goes to be with her parents, and then there's this scene where the two of them are sitting on a bed together. And she says to him, she asks him, do you want to know what's real? He nods his head. He has tears in his eyes. She takes his hands and puts them right over her heart. And she tells him, this is what's real. Love is what's real. Our relationship, the love that we have, the love that we share together, this is what's real. This is what will ground you. Love is what will heal you. This is what Paul is telling those in the city of Colossae. You want to know what's real? Do you want to know how to discover truth? It's love. Love is the truest reality. Love is the truest nature of this world that we're living in. Love, the love that you discovered in Christ, the love that was shown by Christ, the love for you, the love that you are to then go and emulate, that is what is most true. If you want to know how to discover the truth, it's through love. Receiving it and then passing it on, giving it to others. See, for us in the world today, we have narratives, messages that are constantly telling us this is what's true. And we're a bit disoriented. We're a bit confused. We're a bit in the dark. Studies show that the more information that you have to process, the more confused we become. The more information we have to process, the more information that comes our way, the more we're confused as, well, what is really true? What do we believe? It's been said that we're exposed to upwards of maybe 4,000 advertisements a day. Now, I know that's quite a lot. I'm sitting in my patio right here. I see at least one advertisement right now. Actually, more than one. I have my MacBook Air, so I see an Apple advertisement. I see Weber on my grill cover over there. The cars that pass me by, I see all of their logos telling me, oh, this is a Nissan. This is a Chevy. This is a BMW. All the different logos, that's an advertisement. So we're being exposed to advertisements all the time, whether we realize it or not. And these advertisements are telling us, if you purchase this, then you will discover what's real. Our product is what is true. Our product will lead you to a life that is real and that is true. So we have all these advertisements coming our way on a daily basis, but then think of all the messages that we're exposed to simply through our social media. We have all these different people. They're posting articles. One article says this. The very next article can say the complete opposite. It's a very, very confusing time. But as we've come to discover, the confusion, it's nothing new. It's these questions that we're asking, well, what's real, what's true, questions that we've been asking for thousands of years. This is why Paul writes this letter. He realizes that the Colossians, they're a bit confused. And the wisdom that's found in the letter of Colossians, well, it's wisdom for us today. How do we discover what's true? How do we know what's true? Love. Love is the truest nature of reality. I came across this story recently that, to me, man, I read this and I was like, this is it. Everyone needs to hear this story. And talking about the times that we're in right now, I have no idea who this story is attributed to, so I'll just go ahead and read it. Sometimes I just want it to stop. Talk of COVID, protests, looting, brutality, I lose my way. I become convinced that this new normal is real life. But then I meet an 87-year-old who talks of living through polio, diphtheria, Vietnam protests, and yet is still enchanted with life. He seemed surprised when I said that 2020 must be especially challenging for him. No, he said slowly, looking me straight in the eyes. I learned a long time ago to not see the world through the printed headlines. I see the world through the people that surround me. Another reason to be very intentional about the people that you surround yourself with. I see the world with the realization that we love big. Therefore, I choose to write my own headlines. I intentionally choose what I will focus on every single day. I'm very intentional about what I put in front of me, about the narratives that I allow to shape me and guide me. Husband loves wife today. Simple, yet so profound and so rich in love. Family drops everything to come to grandma's bedside. He patted my hand. Old man makes new friend. See, his words collide with my worries, freeing them from the tether I have been holding tight. Think about that. Freeing them from the tether I have been holding tight. It sounds a lot like Paul. See to it that no one holds you captive. See to it that no one tethers you. Freeing me. What's freeing him? Stories of love. Simple stories. Simple, tangible stories of love. It says, these worries float away, and I am left with a renewed spirit. My headline now reads, woman overwhelmed by the spirit of kindness and the reminder that our capacity to love is never ending. Our capacity to love is never ending. What grounded this woman who wrote this? Love. Love. And she was actually grounded by an elder gentleman's experience of love. His being intentional about choosing love as the thing that he was going to believe as the truest thing about life. Love is what grounds us. See, what I love about reading that, the stories, the headlines that this gentleman chooses, they aren't big acts that take a lot of time. They're simple acts. Simple acts that we can all do each day. Calling someone up, calling up a family member, and just simply saying, I love you. I love you. Writing a handwritten letter to someone, a hug. Now, I understand hugs at this time. Maybe we can't experience or give as many hugs as normal, but something as simple as a hug, patting someone else's hand, sitting and having a conversation, showing someone else, here's what I've seen. And I want to free you from the prison that you find yourself in. Here's what I've come to discover as true. Here's what I've grounded myself in. And I want to show you this so that it provides some clarity for you, so that it shines some light on the darkness that you're experiencing, so that it flips the light switch on, so that you no longer have to walk in darkness. I mean, I think about my kids. In the middle of the night, sometimes they'll cry out, maybe because they've had a bad dream. Maybe there's a feeling of hunger. Maybe they wet their diaper. There's something that they're crying out. And to them, it is so overwhelming. Maybe it's scary. It's this overwhelming, all-encompassing emotion. So we'll go in and we'll just pick them up, we'll give them a hug, remind them, hey, the thing you're feeling, the emotion that you're feeling, it'll pass. It'll pass. Emotions, they come and they go all the time. But the thing that endures, the thing that grounds us, the thing that is most true about this life that you're beginning to discover, it's right here in our arms. It's love. Love. Allow that to be the thing that overwhelms you. Allow that to be the thing that you look to for that which is the most true about this world that you're just beginning to experience. There's another letter in the New Testament. It's called 1 John. And John writes, 1 John 4, Verse 7, dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. For Paul, God was at the center of this universe. God was the truest nature of this universe. And Paul experienced this love when he met the resurrected Christ. And at that point, it was his mission, it was his goal to go and spread this love, this grace, to everyone that he came in contact with. He wanted others to experience this love. That's why he wrote Colossians. If I'd have to guess, his heart broke when he heard about these heresies or these philosophies that were confusing those at this church. So quickly he wrote this letter and said, get it there as quickly as possible. There is no time to waste. I want to remind them of love. I want to remind them of something with substance, something that can guide them, something that can bring them back to that which is true. I ran across this quote, which I think is so appropriate for our nation right now. In this time of disorientation, this time of heightened anxiety and chaos, this time when it feels like things are collapsing in on themselves. It's by someone named David French. And he said, human beings need forgiveness like we need oxygen. A nation devoid of grace, or I would add love, will make its people miserable. A nation devoid of grace or love will make its people miserable. What will bring healing to our nation? Grace. Love. There's all competing narratives and stories saying this is true, this is real. But in reality, they're providing more disunity, more division. What we need is we need something like love, like grace. We need acts, tangible acts of love and grace seen all throughout this country, all throughout this world, in order to bring healing. This is the truth that Paul discovered 2,000 years ago, and it's a truth for us in our world today. So there's two questions I want to leave you with. When you ask yourself, how do I discern truth? How do I distinguish that which is true? The first question, is this movement, this cause, this statement, this slogan, is it rooted in love? Because then it's real. It's true when it's rooted in love. And then a second question, is this person or is this organization motivated by love? Because if they're motivated by love, that is the path to truth. That is the path that will help you walk the journey of truth in your life. So my prayer for you this week, my friends, is that you would walk the path of truth. My prayer for you is that you would discover that which is real. You would discover love. That you would experience love. My prayer for you is that if you find yourself in a time of confusion, a time of disorientation, a time of darkness, a time when you just want to throw in the towel or hide under the bed sheets, my prayer is that you would discover love, that you would receive love, that you would be intentional about looking for love, and that you would give love in tangible ways this week. And as you do so, may you discover a truth that is filled with substance and depth, and that carries you along the path. May you come to discover the Christ, whose love and grace is for you and for this entire world. Go in the grace, the peace, and the love of Jesus.